Welcome to the Talking About Podcast. I'm your host, TW. I recognize you have so many choices for your entertainment. So whoever you are and wherever you may be, thank you for spending a few minutes of your day here with me. If you're a wrestling fan, you have already heard the news. On Thursday, we saw a tweet coming from the official account of Triple H informing us of the passing of Wyndham Rotunda, who played most famously Bray Wyatt on WWE television. And it's just a very tragic story. I believe Terry Funk had passed just a day or two earlier, and the wrestling world was already dealing with that. But it hits a little bit different for someone like Terry Funk, who I believe was 79 years old and had lived a full life helping many wrestlers, many promotions, many famous wrestling angles elevate to their highest potential, touch so many lives. And you can mentally prepare for it a little better when a person is up there in age. You kind of say to yourself, I'm not sure how much longer this person might have with us. And little things like, I'm not sure if everyone noticed, but WWE had Terry Funk's obit ready to go. I think the news of Terry Funk's passing came out at some point in the morning, and by early afternoon, the Terry Funk obit piece was circulating on social media. They had that ready to go, and that's not a bad thing or a morbid thing on WWE's part. That's just being a credible, newsworthy organization. I work at a big television organization, and we have obits ready to go for people who are of a certain age, and you just never know. So while it was very sad to hear of Terry Funk's passing, and you all obviously grieve for his family and for their loss, it just hits differently when it's a 36-year-old man who appeared to be in good health. You know, make no mistake, the people that you see performing in professional wrestling rings, especially in WWE, they're high-quality athletes. Even people who may not be known for being athletes like Logan Paul, you can watch the things he does, and you can tell these are high-quality athletes. So someone like Bray Wyatt was just not someone who you would look at and think this person has great health problems. But there were apparently issues there that were not public, and nor should they be. People's health information is their business. It's not for the public's consumption to know about people's different things that may be going on, different underlying health issues a person may have. That's not information for everyone to just have and be consuming. But later in the day, after we found out about the passing, there was another tweet from Sean Ross Sapp, who said that he was given permission to report that Bray Wyatt had gotten COVID earlier in the year, and the COVID exacerbated a heart issue that Bray had already had. And, you know, Bray had been in recovery for some time, but apparently on Thursday, on or around Thursday, he had a heart attack, and it turned out to be fatal. And it's, again, just very sad. It's sad because he was young. It's sad because he had young children. He left behind a wife and brothers and sisters, family that loves and will miss him. And the least of the concerns in all this is us, the wrestling fans. We're the people who matter least when it comes to those who are hurt by the loss of Wyndham Rotunda. But what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes to celebrate Wyndham Rotunda and what he brought to our lives as fans. For me, I think he's one of the most impactful performers that I watched in a wrestling ring. And this goes back all the way to when I first saw Wyndham in one of his many iterations. Like, each one of his forms, each one of his characters, each form of his presentation was all impactful. And I'll go all the way back to the first time we saw him on WWE television as Husky Harris in that version of NXT, which was more like a game show. I'm somebody who grew up watching NWA and WCW, so it was not uncommon for me to see guys who had a body type like a Dusty Rhodes or, you know, a Dick Murdoch, a Harley Race. Not everybody had to be a chiseled, you know, supermodel type looking guy. You know, WWE is so heavy on the cosmetic aspect of wrestling that they're only going to do so much with you if you look a certain way. That's just a reality. And we saw that to be true later in Bray's career when he came back as Bray Wyatt. He was always wearing some sort of gear that covered his upper body, even though, you know, he was in good shape. You know, I believe he played football at Syracuse University. And, you know, again, the fact that he didn't have, you know, six-pack abs and chiseled arms, that to me didn't in any way make him look like he's any less of a tough guy or a badass or a wrestler. He looked like an offensive lineman. And let's be honest, if you know football, the offensive lineman will beat your ass. Like, the offensive linemen are who they send out there to do the dirty work, to do the hard physical grind, so that the pretty boys with abs can run around and do pretty boy with abs things, like throwing passes and scoring touchdowns and catching touchdowns, right? None of that happens, though, without the offensive linemen who are able to physically impose their will on the other team. So seeing Bray Wyatt's body type, or at this time Husky Harris's body type, you know, that didn't make him any less of a it didn't make him look like any lesser of a wrestler to me. He moved really good in the ring, and I could totally see him as, you know, somebody who needed to develop a character. But as far as in the ring, he looked like he could go from day one. That's what I saw. Obviously, the Nexus ended up falling apart, and Husky Harris disappeared off television. And I remember later, probably sometime around, you know, 2011, 2012, something like that, I started reading some things that Husky Harris was down in FCW, and he had developed a new gimmick that was similar to, you know, what we were calling like a cult leader type of gimmick. And when we finally saw it on television, Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family was one of the most unique, creative things we had seen on WWE television in a long time. He was this guy who talked in riddles, and really came off like a real life cult leader type of person. He would say things that sounded profound while maybe not really saying anything at all. And if you watch politics, that's a very real thing. So the original iteration of the Bray Wyatt character that appeared on Monday Night Raw, to me, I thought this was cash money, man. And the way they would do these vignettes, right, with the quick cuts and all the scary images and all of that stuff, really just hit home that this guy was unique. This was something different from, you know, the John Cena and Randy Orton and Batista, you know, all of these guys who look like a million bucks, but the character was not necessarily the most present, right? The first thing you would do is see this guy, go, this guy looks like a million bucks, he looks like a star, and we go from there. With Bray Wyatt, from day one, it was about the character. It was about, let's get lost in what this character is saying, who this character is, what this character is trying to accomplish. That's why this character matters. Then, of course, as time went on, WWE cannot resist adding in elements of the supernatural, right? Bray Wyatt started as creepy cult leader, you know, guy from the backwoods who would, you know, would talk you in circles and then beat you up and maybe brainwash you to end up joining his, you know, his cult, his family, whatever. But of course, WWE can never resist. At some point, that became, you know, Sister Abigail's back from the dead and, you know, all of this stuff. Bray Wyatt has magic powers and all of this stuff. They always got to, Vince always got to take it too far. You always got to go too far left. But it didn't change the fact that Bray Wyatt was still in a world of muscle men, that Bray Wyatt was a character, right? He was not a quote unquote body guy, but what mattered about Bray Wyatt was always what he was saying, what his intentions were, what the story was. And that alone always made Bray Wyatt super unique. My favorite match from that first version of Bray Wyatt was Bray Wyatt's match with Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. I can't remember which year this was. This might have been 2013, 2014. But Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan had a really good match. And at this time, everyone was really ramping up the Daniel Bryan hype train. And they were building up Bray Wyatt to face, to lose to John Cena at WrestleMania. But I still think that Daniel Bryan was such a babyface that at the big events, you expect the babyface to win. And I think everybody was really shocked when Bray Wyatt beat Daniel Bryan clean in that match at the Royal Rumble. And that did two things. Like, one, it continued the bad things happening to Daniel Bryan, which was the story they were telling. But it also really validated Bray Wyatt. It validated him as someone who can beat a major star who's high up on the card. So that was a big moment in Bray's career. And for me, that I thought the match was excellent. The outcome was a surprise. And, you know, Daniel Bryan doesn't have bad matches. But Bray Wyatt, I thought, had a really, you know, really good match. And listen, when you're in these big matches and it just shows you can hang with these great wrestlers, that makes you look great too, right? Like us, the fans watching at home, we don't know who's responsible for stuff looking good. Sometimes we can tell who's responsible for stuff looking bad. And sometimes we think we know who's responsible for stuff looking bad and we just blame somebody, but we don't really know because we're all just fans, right? So Daniel Bryan losing to Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble, that was probably my favorite match of that version of Bray Wyatt. Probably my favorite moment of that version of Bray Wyatt also involved Daniel Bryan. it was when Daniel Bryan was a member of the Wyatt family, and the big climax to Daniel Bryan being a member of the Wyatt family came on an episode of Raw where Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt, they were in a cage match, and this is where Daniel Bryan decided that he was going to break free of the Wyatt family. And, you know, him and Bray Wyatt, they had a fight. The way Daniel Bryan tells it, he ended up getting a concussion and doesn't remember any of it. But the way it happened on television was just so epic, right? Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt, you know, Bray was like telling Daniel Bryan what to do, right? He would like yell at them, and Daniel Bryan decided to break free. He ended up beating up Bray Wyatt and, you know, tossed him out of the cage or whatever. And then Daniel Bryan climbs into the top of the cage and the whole arena is chanting, yes, yes, yes. And it was just one of those moments that was visually so incredible. And again, as a moment, the moment was super incredible. Like it was pretty great all around. So that was another one of my favorite moments from Bray Wyatt. But again, you know, none of that, while Daniel Bryan was rising, right? And he was in probably, gosh, man, one of the hottest times in the rise of Daniel Bryan. That moment was a big star-making moment for Daniel Bryan. But you can't have those big star-making moments for your baby faces without credible, threatening heels. And I thought Bray Wyatt always did a great job of being a credible, threatening heel. A lot of people would say Bray Wyatt needed to win more, and I didn't agree with that. I don't think the heels need to win. I think the heels just need to put the baby faces in jeopardy and give them something to fight for. But at the end of the day, I think the baby face should win, right? I think when the heel wins, that's weird. So Daniel Bryan losing to Bray Wyatt, right, was all part of the big setup for what would ultimately be Daniel Bryan becoming champion. But again, you know, in order to get there, you need strong, credible, threatening heels. And Bray Wyatt did a great job of being that for so many people. He was that for John Cena, you know, when they had the moment with the little boy, you know, singing. And it was really cool because it was a great representation of what John Cena stood for, right? He was the guy, I'm here for the kids, never give up, all this other stuff. You know, the famous amount of make-a-wishes that he does, all this stuff was, you know, so representative of John Cena. And then Bray Wyatt kind of had this thing where, hey, we're gonna do battle psychologically before we ever get in the ring, and I'm gonna tear you down for what you think you stand for. And that again is just a great angle to attack wrestling. And so, you know, Bray Wyatt was the catalyst for so many of these cool moments. I was really happy when he finally won the WWE Championship at the Elimination Chamber. I thought that was great. Then he had his big, the feud with Randy Orton leading up to the match in Orlando. I thought that was a really good feud. I thought that they kind of ruined the match itself by trying to do too much with all the graphics in the ring and projections and all that stuff. I thought the story they were telling was all really good, and Randy Orton trying to, you know, destroy the Wyatt family from within. Like, I thought that was actually a really, really great story. And the match they ended up with, I didn't think did justice to the story. But that's kind of the beauty of what Bray Wyatt brought to the table. Is Bray Wyatt would make you feel something with the elements of story that maybe would be lacking in other parts of the storytelling, you know, when it came to the actual matches, the wins and losses, and all of that. So we fast forward, you know, Bray Wyatt losing the title from Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt goes away for a little while, and then Bray Wyatt comes back as The Fiend. Now, me personally, I was never a big fan of The Fiend. Like, I was never someone who was like, I love this character. The reason why I didn't love the character is because I thought that they made the character too invincible. The way that they were presenting The Fiend, you know, was like nothing at all could hurt him. And that's a problem, because once he finally loses, you're going to say, but didn't somebody try that on him before? And sure enough, when they finally had The Fiend lose to Goldberg in Saudi Arabia, everybody was like, really? That was, you know, a weak-looking jackhammer, and it didn't seem worthy of all of the equity that had been put into building the strength of the Fiend character. And it was funny, because I think after Goldberg beat The Fiend, Seth Rollins tweeted, I should have tried the jackhammer. Which was hilarious, because, you know, in that original Hell in a Cell match between Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt, you know, Seth Rollins tried everything to, you know, beat Bray Wyatt, and, you know, nothing would work. It was like he was invincible. So me personally, I'm never a fan of that kind of booking, because I think you book yourself into a corner when you present somebody as invincible, because they have to lose at some point. And then whenever they lose, it makes the explanation for their loss unacceptable. So I didn't love the way they did that early on with The Fiend. And, you know, from a presentation standpoint, I thought it was tough to recover after that. But nonetheless, from a creativity standpoint, the way they would do The Fiend's entrances, where he would attack people and the lights would shut off, and, you know, they did it step by step. You'd hear the flickering of the lights and, you know, the let me in and all of that. I don't think there's ever been a character done like that in the history of WWE. Like, really done that well. And it added that much chill and suspense to everything they were doing. And all of this is truly just a testament to the creativity of Wyndham Rotunda. Because I don't believe, you know, the WWE really had the chops to come up with stuff like that on their own. If they did, they'd be trying it, right? But this guy was creative enough and believable enough to where he could do these characters that were so out of the box and make you say, all right, let me give it a chance. Let me just see where this is going. And so Bray Wyatt, to me, will always be remembered as probably the most creative character ever. You know, a character that really had no boundaries. Bray Wyatt as the character could have been anything. You know, even if you just think about the versions of Bray Wyatt that we saw, that character could have still come back and been morphed into so many different things. There were no limits on that character, and I believe there were no limits on the creativity of Wyndham Rotunda to create any type of story and any type of character. So as a wrestling fan, I was in the audience for the match between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton in Orlando, and, you know, that was really cool. But I gotta say, I was in the audience for an episode of SmackDown. There was a taping of SmackDown at the Hartford Coliseum, the XL Center. And when Bray Wyatt came out, man, it was just so cool to see the lights go down and see all the people's cell phone lights go up. Like, to me, that's the true symbol of connection. Is what do you inspire people to do? When Bray Wyatt started coming out, you know, and the lights would drop, that wasn't necessarily part of that wasn't planned, right? Now, eventually, over time, they would the WWE production made it part that they would shoot it, obviously, right? Like, if you shoot something and put it on camera, you want the people at home to see it, you want them to react to it. But that began organically, right? The lights would drop and the people would put up their cell phone lights just to say, hey, I'm here with you, right? And I just thought that was like so dope. And, you know, to be in the arena when the lights go down and you see all those people put their cell phone lights up, it would give you chills, man. It would give you chills because you know that what's happening on the stage is connecting so well with all the people that you're in the midst of. And I think that is the true legacy of Wyndham Rotunda. You know, one of the greatest things you can do with your life is affect other people. And I think Wyndham Rotunda affected a lot of people, you know, with his creativity, with his art, by being someone who was unique and different. You provide an example for other people who feel like they are unique and different to be able to say, it gets better. I'm going to be okay. I can find an outlet for my creativity. And it's okay sometimes to not be okay. By being an example of someone who shines through all of those struggles, all of those hardships, you become an example for others. And I believe he was that. And I think it can't be better personified than by what happened at the beginning of SmackDown on the Friday after Bray Wyatt's passing. We saw a beautiful video package tribute to Bray Wyatt play. And then after the package was over, they come out onto the stage and they show all the superstars lined up in tribute of, you know, both Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt. And they drop the lights, and sitting on the stage is a rocking chair that would be often used during Bray Wyatt's skits. When Bray Wyatt first appeared as the cult leader character, he would often be sitting in a rocking chair giving his promos. Well, on this night on the stage, the rocking chair was sitting there, and the lantern light would be in the ring later. But while the rocking chair was sitting there, it was just sitting there, and there was smoke going over the stage. There was a spotlight on it, and the whole crowd just started singing, "He's got the whole world in his hands," unprompted. And I think that's just a, you know, you can't deny the things that the crowd does that you don't ask them to do. There'll never be a better example of the fact that a character touches the audience than of the things that they do that you don't ask them to do. And so, thanks for all the inspiration, Wyndham. Rest in peace. God bless the family. And if you're someone out there who has the chance to inspire people, do it. Thanks for listening to the pod. We'll talk soon.